You're listening to a podcast by the United Nations Research Institute for Social Development.
Now, the last one. Daryl Reed. So you will say everything about fair trade, the story of fair trade. You are professor of business and society at York University in Toronto. You have worked a lot about on fair trade movements, alternative development models, and development ethics. You are the president of the Canadian Association for Studies in Cooperation. So you have a beautiful a beautiful T-shirt for cooperation. And your paper examines the evolution of certified fair trade, its developmental impacts, and the tensions that have risen between producer organizations, alternative trade organizations, Fair Trade International, and the labeling initiative. So you have the floor.
Okay. Thank you very much, Nicole. I wanted to thank everyone who's been involved in organizing this conference. I think it's a wonderful idea, and I'm very glad to be here. Has anyone in this room not heard of fair trade? Okay, well, I thought I was on pretty safe ground there. Nicole was nice enough to point out my fashion statement and my prop here, because what you see on the side of the arm is a little fair trade logo. And so the question you might reflect on as I'm speaking is whether this shirt was made in the social and solidarity economy. Well, think about that. I'm going to talk a little bit about the development of fair trade, and then contributions, tensions, and the future, if there's a future. There might be. Before there was fair trade, many of you will have heard of the notion of alternative trade. And alternative trade was definitely part of the social and solidarity economy before we tended to use that term, because it involved small producers, co-ops usually, and it involved northern importers who were NGOs or cooperatives. And you actually had a value chain then that was a complete social and solidarity value chain. They didn't sell a lot because they sold through world shops and organic food shops, and that's not where most people buy most of their groceries and things like this. So fair trade is really an initiative to try to scale up. And it was specifically designed to do that. And in doing that, it developed a certification process, because when you start moving out of the social and solidarity economy, and that's what they were doing because they wanted to get their fair trade products on supermarket shelves, large supermarkets, then, as we saw, there's the problems of trust. And so certification allowed them to deal with issues of trust. So you've got a seal saying, okay, you're not buying this from Oxfam anymore. How can we trust the people we're buying it from? And you look for the little seal, and you know the conditions under which it's made. That's the very short version of the origin story. Now, what happened when fair trade did that? A whole bunch of contradictions started to get involved in fair trade. The first one contradiction is that we suddenly got two sets of norms within fair trade. We have the original fair trade values, which are based upon solidarity, democracy, driving the value down to the bottom of the chain. And that's what all of the social economy actors were still trying to operate by. But then the corporate actors, especially the large retailers at first, then the agro-food industry, they're operating by a different set of standards, which are minimum standards. And that meant they had to pay a minimum price. Now they don't even have to pay a minimum price in all of the sectors, but that's how it started. They had to pay a social premium, and there's quality standards. So you have two different sets of standards in fair trade. Then fair trade started out as an organization for small producers. Then they started introducing production on large estates. So you're getting two different forms of production within fair trade now, too. And an organization which was started by and for small producers now has estate production in it. And then the other contradiction, in this body that was set up by small producers originally, when the national labeling bodies came together and set up a governance body, there were no small producers represented. It was all northern labeling bodies in an organization that was meant to empower small producers. So, and how democratic those national bodies were is also somewhat open to question. Who were they representing? So within fair trade, then, we have all of these contradictions going on. Now, as fair trade started to emerge and prove successful, in terms of sales at least, we got competitors into fair trade. So fair trade was basically set up in large part, or started to grow in large part, because it was a way of introducing regulation after the state withdrew its support for small producers. When they started to take away commodity boards, this was a way for small producers to try to inject some form of state regulation, or non-state regulation, as it were. There were problems with the governance, as I say, but then other certifying bodies came in as well, competitors, and they would be either what we would call multi-stakeholder associations or self-regulation, and they would have much lower standards. They would not have minimum prices, very, very weak monitoring operations, no accountability. Many of these were self-appointing boards. And so we're getting this contradiction between different regulatory approaches. So what that leads to, in effect, is this. Within fair trade, we end up with at least six different types of value chains. The first one is that original alternative trade value chain. And that is, one could argue, part of the social and solidarity economy. The second one, when fair trade first started to be certified, that's when you had that value chain going all the way up until you get to the retailers. Then the retailers were not part of the social and solidarity economy. When you bring in people like Tesco, they're really not part of the social and solidarity economy. The third chain is what happens once those large corporations start coming in. They start trying to take control of the value chains. And what they basically do is they sort of baptize their own value chains as fair trade. Now, they may still have small producers at the bottom of those chains, but there's nothing left in terms of any solidarity relations at all. It's a corporate-dominated value chain, which has small producer cooperatives at the very bottom of the chain. But there's nothing across that chain which has relations of solidarity. And then in the fourth one, that chain, we have estate production. So we've taken solidarity completely out of it because there's not even one social and solidarity economy organization left in the chain. So it's a complete chain which is corporate. But at least the third and the fourth one have some form of social regulation by a body which is made up of NGOs and later producer organizations. When we get to the other ones, you don't even have that. You have private regulation. And all those will call themselves fair trade, and the first four all have the same seal, but they're four quite distinct, or two very distinct forms of production. one which is arguably part of the social and solidarity of the economy, and one which is probably not at all. Oops, I'm pressing the wrong button. So we can look at different types of value chains. So the question is, what opportunities does fair trade provide? It provides capacity building for producer organizations, access to resources, learning, scaling up, moving up value chains, community development through social and solidarity funds, public engagement, development of new product markets. Fair trade has gone from agricultural products to resources, you get fair trade gold now, into manufacturing. And it's also a development of new markets for products, opening up domestic markets for fair trade, and even South-South fair trade is what they're getting into. So plenty of potential markets or opportunities within value chains. The producer networks as well. So there's three producer networks in Latin America, Africa, and Asia. Again, capacity building. Now we have peer-to-peer learning, resource sharing among members of the social and solidarity economy, education, advocacy, public policy as well. So trying to make their own non-state regulation stronger and connected more to state regulation. And then, as I say, it's really also this attempt to develop regulation so that you can, and they do that through the flow system, and now the Latin American producers have set up their own label as well, functions to establish norms, facilitating business relations, education. In a sense, they're stepping in the place of an absent state, which was not regulating. So the tensions. There's tensions within and among the producer associations. They disagree about what should be part of fair trade. They're very upset that fair trade gold is part of fair trade, and that was not a decision the producers were allowed to have any say in. What role their own certification should have, there's some tensions there. They mostly want it. In Africa, who is a small producer? In South Africa, a lot of the fair trade wine comes from very large producers. Many of those are white producers, not black Africans. How marginalized are they? If fair trade is supposed to help marginalized producers? In Asia, they actually have the estate owners in the Small Producers Association, which causes all sorts of tensions in the... And then there's tensions of unfair competition, because what has happened now is that you actually get competition between social and solidarity value chains and corporate value chains within fair trade and organizations that are carrying the exact same logo. And it's competition between small producers and large estates. At the bottom of the chain and at the top of the chain, it's competition between very, very large supermarkets and agro-food industries and small social and solidarity economy retailers and importers. And then you get unfair competition between the different types of regulatory bodies, FLO and its competitors. And then there's tensions within the government of fair trade, because there's different goals, there's different target audiences, small producer versus agricultural workers, how do they get incorporated in, different institutional interests, the interests of the certifying bodies themselves are quite different from those of the small producers. Different analysis of the problem. Is the problem the fact that small producers just aren't competitive enough, or is it the fact that we have oligopolistic markets, which are basically quite unjust? And what strategies? Should we grow it as fast as we can, open up as many products as we can, or should we go slow and try and control the growth? So, the future, three slides, and we're done.
Okay.
Which of these versions of fair trade is going to win out, survive? And that means who are the key protagonists? There's different protagonists in these different variants. What's the key site of contestation, and who wins the day? So the corporate side of things with these competing fair trade labels, it's really a corporate social responsibility program, self-regulation by corporations. It's all about them competing in the market. You have a market for values. You leave it up to the consumer to decide what values do you want, what do you think fair trade should be, right? Mass marketing and in very uncompetitive markets. The second one, where corporations are within the flow system, we've got a corporate accountability model in which we're trying to hold corporations in a non-state way because the state won't regulate them. Key site of contestation is the state or people trying to substitute for the state. You're trying to develop strategies to hold corporations accountable and ideally potentially bring the state back in. And the last version, which is that which is really part of the social and solidarity economy, the key actors are the producers at the base. They have other allies, northern importers, distributors, cooperative retailers, consumers, and citizen movements. The key site of contestation here is over production, setting up a different type of production to compete against capitalist chains. And the strategy, again, develop social and solidarity value chains, which are based upon solidarity, and to develop policies which will help support those as well, bring the state back into the idea to the degree that you can, in education and mobilization. Which one is going to win out? That depends on you and how much you support things.
Check out our other podcasts available free on the iTunes Store. For more information, go to our website, www.unris.org. Thank you for listening.